and welcome to another episode of Dez and Marco.
I'm Dez.
And I'm Marco. Hello, Dez. We've got a ton of stuff to talk about today, so let's jump right into it. What beer have you picked for today?
It's a mythical beer. Drumch. All right, sorry. It's from Greece, and it's Greece's probably cheapest, nastiest beer called Mythos.
Oh, wow. So let me get this straight. If you don't have a beer with a pun, you will make one.
That's the way I roll.
Yeah. I actually really like that beer because for me, Mythos is holiday.
You save us about like every foreign beer.
Well, what can I say? I travel a lot.
But okay, I know for a fact that this beer, I've had this before when I've been on holiday in Greece. And as you've mentioned, beers always taste better on holiday. But I think, subjectively speaking, it's not the best. Despite the fact that this has traveled the width of the continent, it was still dirt cheap. So I suspect it's not going to be the best. But anyway, what are you drinking?
From my trip to France a few weeks ago, I picked up a few beers. This one is a blonde beer from the Caporal Brasserie in Toulouse, and it's called Blonde Soif. Soif? 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 You know French. Soif.
You clearly don't.
I do not.
All right.
Come on, how do you pronounce this?
Blonde Soif. Yeah,
that's what I said.
Eventually.
Yeah, you're going to have to beep out the nope. Bad words I said. Anyway. Cheers.
Cheers.
Santé.
I don't know what it is in Greek.
I don't know. Whatever. Parakalo.
Souvlaki.
Well, I mean, we have Google in front of us. How to say cheers in Greek. Oh, Jesus. Stinyasas. Something like that.
Don't they just go like oppa and like throw plates on the floor?
I don't know. No one listens from Greece, so who cares? But again, we really have a tight schedule today. So the news. We talked about it a few weeks ago when the Japanese tried to send a rover to the moon and it crashed. Space, and especially the moon, is difficult.
Yes. If you've been following space news, we knew about both Russia and India having planned missions to land on the southern pole of the moon. And rumor has it that the Russians actually kind of like accelerated their rocket because they wanted to land there before the Indians.
Okay.
Just hot off the press, the Russian lander, technically speaking, has landed on the moon.
Maybe not in one piece.
Definitely not in one piece. It has chosen not to communicate with Earth.
By its own choice.
So this is how the Russians are selling it. They've successfully landed in multiple pieces on the southern pole of the moon. And their super sophisticated lander has got silent communication features. So they don't know what it's doing.
Yes, so the Luna 25 has allegedly crashed into the moon. So the landing was not successful.
My understanding is that it actually lost communication on the maneuver to approach the southern pole, where it spun out of control. So they lost contact with the lander even before it kind of started its descent. I think they kind of it did its initial maneuver to go towards the southern pole, and that's when it spun out of control and they've lost communication. But India's mission has literally landed just like yesterday or whatever, and they've landed successfully. So they have now become the fourth nation in the history of mankind to have successfully soft landed a man-made object onto the moon. Obviously following the United States, the old Soviet Union, China, and now India joins the club. So that's a pretty big achievement.
Yeah, congratulations to the Indian Space Agency then. That's actually a great achievement because it's not easy, as we saw in recent times.
So I'd love to talk more about this. We always have space episodes planned, and it's something that maybe when we start to get a bit more information about how the lander's doing, and when we start to get more information from it, we can talk about the challenges that it presented. But unless you've got any qualms, Marco, shall we move on to our main?
Let's move on. So movies are back and cinemas have big summer blockbusters again. It's so exciting.
I know. And I don't know about you, but the weather here this summer, especially July and August, has been terrible. So going to the cinema was actually a very viable option.
Yeah. I can't believe how much I missed it. I haven't been in the cinema since The Batman. So last year or a couple years ago, I don't know. It's just fun. You go there, you get like a big thing of popcorn, and then you watch a cool movie. And then you finish the popcorn by the time the trailers are over, but that's a different story. So between me and you, we've seen 4 heavily advertised, I guess, or blockbusters in the last couple of weeks. I'll go first, and I'll tell you a little bit about Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
Go ahead.
So you're very familiar with the Mission Impossible saga. It's the story of Ethan Hunt, played by, obviously, Tom Cruise, where the plot essentially is not important. The action is. And these are the movies that sort of made Tom Cruise famous for doing his own stunts. If you remember the previous one, which I cannot remember the subtitle of, he famously like jumped from one building to another and broke his ankle and continued the shot. And that was the shot that ended up in the movie. And this one is the same. Like, the action sequences are out of this world, which begs the question, what else can they come up with? Like, he's just doing all sorts of things. He's on like boats, planes, trains, motorcycles. There's a famous scene that's also in the trailer where he's kind of like jumping off of a mountain with a motorcycle, accompanied by his gang of friends, played by Ving Rhames and Simon Pegg, where this time the bad guy is an AI.
Oh, no spoilers. Okay, we'll keep things, let's say, relatively focused. Mission Impossible has had lots of movies, some great, some not so great. How does this rank? Is it worth watching?
Depends what you're in the mood for. So I think the plot is pretty basic. The action is amazing. If you want a movie to just eat popcorn to, enjoy the visuals and the action, then yeah, this is good. It's not the best Mission Impossible movie, in my opinion. Like, I'm a big fan of Mission Impossible 3, and I think 4, which is like, is that the one where they're on the Burj Khalifa? And
I have to admit, like, after I think the one with Henry Cavill, after that I kind of stopped watching them.
Yeah, but that's also the thing, they're all kind of a blur. Like, I honestly don't know how many they made. There are like all I can clearly remember action sequences, but I can't place them in any movie, if you get what I mean.
Yeah,
but it's a Mission Impossible movie. Like, it does what it says on the tin, you know. It's just action and it's fun and it's various locations. It's kind of like an American James Bond movie. It's fancy locations, cool action, and things like that. However, there is one scene that I find particularly funny. So, as I stated before, the main antagonist is an AI capable of communicating, like, and has infiltrated all of the computers and whatever of the world. So it controls every government, controls every like secret organization and things like that. So it's infiltrated everything. And at the end, there is a scene where Ethan Hunt is, you know, doing his world-saving shenanigans. And Benji, the character played by Simon Pegg, who's supposed to be like the techie of the group, he's following him, or he's following nearby, like trying to program something into a computer, whatever, driving a brand new BMW iX, which is, I mean, BMW is very famous for doing a lot of product placement in the Mission Impossible movies. And however, I went to see, and this BMW has over-the-air updates. So it's connected.
Okay.
So you pick a car that connects to the internet to fight an AI. Okay. So yeah, I found that quite funny. Anyway, if you like the Mission Impossible movies, you're going to like this one because it's just more of the same. Does it stand out? Probably not.
Okay. But considering the relative poor pickings that we've had recently, I think this was kind of like a sign of things to come for like cinemas in general. Mission Impossible was maybe the first of the blockbuster season. And as you said, pretty decent effort.
Yeah. So apparently it didn't do that well at the box office. especially compared to how much it cost to make, or and also compared to how much money they were expected or they were expecting to make off of it. And there's a few reasons behind it. Like, one, apparently it was plagued by production issues, like injuries, and they had to change locations. And there's a famous, I think it went viral, like a famous audio from Tom Cruise just going bananas with someone who wasn't respecting COVID protocol. And so it was, it had a troubled birth, this movie. But then also another thing that I was reading the other day or watching a video about is that maybe people are starting to get a little bit tired of these sequels and reboots and remakes and such. I was reading that also, like, the latest Marvel movies didn't quite do as well at the box office. And so maybe there's a chance that we get to see new ideas and new movies. Kind of like the one you went to see.
Continuing on what you said, that this wasn't quite a summer blockbuster. I didn't even go see this in the cinema. And this is just a parenthesis to continue from what you said before. You were talking about the Marvel movies. I saw the latest Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I'll admit, I didn't go watch it in the cinema because I knew that within months it was going to go on Disney Plus. And that's exactly what happened. The movie, again, it's not bad, but if you've seen the first two, it's not adding anything new. As much as it was a decent movie, as you said, there's that element of fatigue. Like, I genuinely do not think you're missing out by not seeing it.
Yeah, okay.
However, the movie I did go see cannot be called an original film, but I do think in spirit it feels like one. One of the films which I'm probably the only person I know who was really excited about it is the latest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie called Mutant Mayhem. I don't know if you remember, not that long ago, Michael Bay did like the live action remake, reboot of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and they were horrible. The ones with Megan Fox.
Yeah, I know of it, but I haven't seen it.
Good. Don't watch them. Spare your eyeballs. This is animation, but it's not CGI. It's kind of like cel-shaded. Think Into the Spider-Verse. Kind of very similar to that.
Which looks beautiful.
This is the same. It looks beautiful. It looks dark. It looks grimy. It looks like you're watching a comic book. It's really well done, to the point that sometimes you're kind of just in awe at what they've done as opposed to the actual, let's say, movie. But the movie itself is produced by Seth Rogen, and you can just tell that he was kind of paying homage to the Ninja Turtles from the 80s and 90s. And the film feels like it should be set in the 80s and 90s. All the references are from the 80s and 90s, but it's set today. But it's like, you know, modern day New York is kind of clean, sanitized, whereas New York of the 80s and 90s, like Robocop, it was kind of like dirty, you know what I mean? It was crime-ridden. Yeah. So they kind of married the two together. And again, with that art style, it is so much fun. And you can tell that they had fun making it. If you look at the voice cast, especially not of the Turtles. So one thing they did, which was really cool, the Ninja Turtles are actually voiced by teenagers. So they're all like newcomers.
Okay.
And it's really quite refreshing that you can tell, you can sense the energy. But then you look at the other side characters. Paul Rudd voices one of the characters. Post Malone voices one of the characters. Mr. Beast has a bit role, but it's forgivable.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, Ice Cube voices one of the characters. Jackie Chan is Splinter. One of the coolest things I think they did is that Splinter is kind of known to be the martial arts rat who was trained by a dojo when Shredder attacked, sort of thing, as per the comics. But in this, they've actually made him just a middle-aged man, but in rat form, which is quite funny. And then there's also Giancarlo Esposito, who is known maybe more famously as Gustavo Fring, who seems to be everything right now.
Yeah.
So Seth Rogen has a cameo, who also produces it. John Cena does a voice. Like, they just had so much fun with it. You could just tell. The story is kind of what you'd expect in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. A big, not even curveball, like a big deviation from the standard story is that Shredder isn't the main bad guy. But there's a little asterisk there. But he isn't the main bad guy. And he's barely in the movie. Like, honestly, it's not about Shredder. And it's a really nice origin story, heavily inspired by the comics and really nailing the balance between still talking about a story which predominantly aimed at like kids, but being like edgy and perfect for millennials.
Okay, that's interesting. But now I'm thinking, how does the Ninja Turtles come into like? Did it start off as a cartoon, as a comic book, was it a thing that they decided to make toys?
It was originally a comic book, and I think it was like a single comic, like a story with an end and like deaths. Okay. And then it got picked up for the cartoon. Then the cartoon became insanely popular and it sparked all the toys that you can think of. And then the video games and then the movies in the 80s and the 90s. Mm. And so peak Turtle Mania was in the sort of late 80s, early 90s. And so it started off as a comic and then went into the beloved cartoon that we all kind of remember, which was, in retrospect, amazing.
Yeah, the cartoon was good. I liked it.
And I think this shares a lot more with that. And there was a little bit of, I say, controversy because people said they went too woke because April O'Neil was changed from a journalist to like a black teenager. But I honestly felt like indifference to that change. Like it makes sense to what they did in the movie. And honestly, like I don't want to say it's a non-brainer. It was just not even a consideration. It's honestly a good movie.
Okay. So you recommend it?
I recommend it. I appreciate it. It might not be everyone's cup of tea. You might need to have ADHD to fully enjoy it. But yeah, it's good fun, even if it's just for the animation style. And the soundtrack is banging, like absolutely banging. Do you know Trent Reznor from the Nine Inch Nails?
Yeah.
He did the soundtrack.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's banging. Like, it's honestly incredible.
Okay. We had a little debate a couple of weeks ago. I had just went to see the next movie that we're going to talk about, which is Barbie. And I'm super into the soundtrack because also I very not so secretly am a big fan of Dua Lipa. Because we're going to go, Des and I are going to go on a road trip together shortly. I warned him, like, look, we're going to work on the, so we're kind of working on the playlist. And it's like, look, I told him, we're going to have a lot of Barbie soundtrack songs. And you replied by saying, but we're also going to have a lot of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles soundtrack because apparently it's good.
It's honestly amazing. Ice Cube is the main bad guy in the movie. So you can imagine what kind of music is on it.
Yeah, okay.
So marry Nine Inch Nails with Ice Cube and you've got, honestly, the most banging soundtrack in the world. Or at least of this summer.
Okay. I mean, well, I don't know. I still have to listen to it, but I'm a big fan of the Barbie one. But let's turn the page and talk about that. This is the one that we've both seen. And honestly, I was dying of laughter.
I was honestly going in, not with low expectations. I was just a bit apprehensive because this movie has been hyped a lot. Word of mouth, everyone saying it's really good. Beyond expectations at the box office, it's outperformed its wildest dreams. So I was kind of like, it can't be as good as people say. But I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, and I was the same. I walked into the cinema kind of expecting this movie to be just like a silly movie that talks about, I don't know, everybody's favorite doll. But it's actually really good. Like, it's just like a funny, funny movie. So the story is stereotypical Barbie, played by Margot Robbie, lives in Barbie world or Barbie land. She wakes up one day and some things are off. And to sort out these things or to get to the bottom of why they're off, she needs to go to the real world and find out. First off, like Barbie, what is it? Barbie World or Barbie Land?
I think it's Barbie Land.
Okay, Barbie Land is just this insane place where everything is perfect and Barbies rule the world and Kens are basically plus ones.
And can I just say that Barbie Land world is just visually really fun. In the sense that like the houses are all real Barbie toys. The whole aesthetic is that bubblegum plastic pink. It feels like they're in a toy land because like water doesn't exist. The swimming pools are literally like the toy Barbie swimming pools. The beach is fake. And the far backgrounds are 2D. And it's just really quite, you know, funny. Like, they obviously have a lot of running gags with that. It's to emphasize the fact that it's a fantasy world.
Yeah, it's a place where toys live. It's ridiculous. Honestly, the best character is Ken, played by Ryan Gosling.
We need to, again, specify, there's a lot of Kens. Just like there is all the different kinds of Barbie, and these are all accurate Barbies, may I add. If you go and Google the different types of Barbies that Mattel has made, they're all genuine, and Margot Robbie, as you mentioned, plays a stereotypical one. The same applies to the Kens, and you have all the different kind of Kens, and Ryan Gosling plays Beach Ken, and he's like the main Ken the story is centered around. That in and of itself is quite funny, and they roll with it very hilariously. Yeah. But Ryan Gosling is, in my opinion, standout performance of the movie. And there's a lot of really good performances, but his is just on a different level. And he's able to act both harmless, but at the same time, really impersonify toxic masculinity, but never actually appearing threatening. He's just really threaded that needle perfectly.
Yeah, he's spot on. And obviously there's some underlying tones of like feminism and things like that. So I think this movie might really be more or might be catering more to women, but I still loved it. It was just so much fun, and this setting that they created is ridiculous but also charming at the same time. And when they go into the real world, it's like a real culture shock for Barbie and the people that end up going. The actors are spot on. The even bad guy, if you want to call it that, played by Will Ferrell, who's the CEO of Mattel. I don't know. It's just such a fun movie. You know what? Like, I really missed going to the cinema and just having a laugh like that.
And I can guarantee if you go watch it, you will laugh out loud.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's much better than I think anyone of us really expected. So good job by director Greta Gerwig, sorry. And apparently, like, yeah, she was the one, she wrote it and directed it, and Margot Robbie actually produced it, but the director was like, I want you in the movie. Also, Margot Robbie spot on as Barbie. Oh,
completely spot on. And they also acknowledge that. So there's a narrator in the movie voiced by Helen Mirren, and there's one scene where, you know, Margot Robbie is physically flawless. And as you said, things are off, and Barbie starts to question herself, and there are some inbuilt insecurities. They acknowledge the fact that Margot Robbie's maybe not the best person to push across the point of not appearing perfect.
Yeah. Like, even the narrator is funny. But it's a really good movie. I hope they don't ruin it by making sequels or making it a franchise or something like that. But it's just great. I would totally go rewatch it.
And to think that the original Barbie was meant to be Amy Schumer.
Really?
Did you not know this? So Amy Schumer was offered the role, but she had to turn it down due to a conflict of not interest. Like, she was filming something else and couldn't do it.
Okay.
I think they then offered it to Margot Robbie, who kind of was like, liked it, but was like, no, we can do better. So she then got on board as a producer, and they like upped the budget. And then they made the movie they wanted to make. So I think a lot of the themes that were present in this movie might have worked with Amy Schumer. But again, that whole sort of, you know, nailing the balance, I think with Margot Robbie, they were able to make the movie they wanted to make.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I get that. But speaking of Barbie and soundtracks, there is one song that is notably missing from this soundtrack.
Okay, are you talking Barbie Girl?
Of course I'm talking Barbie Girl. Okay, I mean,
but it is there, but it's remixed.
Is it?
Yeah, there's a remix version. No. So it's used as what do you call it when they take like a sample of it?
Sampled?
Yeah, so it is sampled in one of the songs.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, because like famously, so that song, I mean, it's a fun, playful song, which would go great about a fun, playful movie about Barbie. But that song is not there. And the reason being that Aqua didn't give the rights to the movie, or the rights, because like back in the day, back in the 90s, when the song came out, Mattel sued them.
Yes, I remember this.
Yeah, they sued them for giving like the wrong idea of what Barbie represented and whatever. because it was a silly song and Mattel was all serious apparently. Yeah, and so like fast forward to a couple of decades later and that song is not in the soundtrack, although apparently it is sampled in some way.
I've just got the soundtrack here on my Tidal or Spotify, whatever you want to call it. And song number 3 is called Barbie World, brackets, with Aqua, close brackets, open brackets, featuring Aqua, close brackets. But it's sung by Nicki Minaj and Ice Spice.
Okay. But enough about having fun and nice things in pink, Bez, when there's other way more serious, way more black and whitey things to talk about. I went to see the other massive blockbuster of the summer, Christopher Nolan's new movie, Oppenheimer. And yeah, the tone is a little bit different.
Okay, so I want to see this movie, I'll be honest, but I will not watch it in the cinema. It's just too long.
It is 3 hours. I think it's Christopher Nolan's longest movie ever. And he is not known for doing short movies. But it's the story of American physicist Oppenheimer, J. Robert Oppenheimer, who was named by some as the father of the atomic bomb. So he headed the Manhattan Project in the New Mexico desert in Los Alamos. When the U.S. was trying to develop an atomic bomb, which eventually was the one that arguably ended the Second World War. Played by an incredible Cillian Murphy, and among others, there's Emily Blunt, Matt Damon, Robert Downey Jr. There's a pretty good cast. Yeah, it's long, but it's not unbearably long. If you get what I mean. Kind of like, I don't know, do you remember The Batman? I think it was a couple of years ago. Which was a really long movie, but you didn't feel like it. Or you didn't feel it. Because stuff happened.
If I'm not mistaken, this follows the life of Oppenheimer. And if you, I don't know, if your YouTube feed is like my YouTube feed, I think we touched upon this previously. It's currently swamped with videos about Oppenheimer, despite the fact I haven't researched it in any shape, way, or form. But even before that, this is a very interesting man from his childhood with a relatively, let's say, unorthodox upbringing, from his obviously his involvement as a physicist and with the Manhattan Project. After the Second World War, he was quite controversial because probably he was a little bit of a communist, which at that time was a little bit frowned upon.
A little. At the height of the Cold War, being a communist was very much frowned upon in the US.
Maybe what was perceived as being un-American, he was, if I'm not mistaken, he was a little bit against nuclear proliferation. I guess there's a lot there to kind of change the tone of the movie to keep it interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I guess, part of the movie so the movie is sort of follows his life in a way, like first his upbringing, but I guess from like university onwards, so it doesn't touch very much on his childhood. Then it's the part where he's developing the bomb, which is actually, I guess, the most exciting part of the movie. And then the end is sort of the regret that this man had to live with because his creation ended up being dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, killing literally hundreds of thousands of people. And then apparently, like, after that, because of his affiliations and such, he got sort of put on a sort of trial. But it wasn't a trial because more about, like, the renewal of his security clearance to be able to work on these things. I didn't know anything about his life. I didn't know, honestly, who he was up until I saw the first trailer of the movie like a few months back. Super interesting character. Yeah, it's interesting how still one person can be so influential in the world we live in today.
It wasn't the world we live in today, though, was it?
Well, but then it became the world we live in today. But anyway, apart from that, I think this could be one of the best Christopher Nolan movies ever. For the reason being, it's based on facts. Or it's based on kind of like Dunkirk was good because it was something that actually happened. I feel like recently, with the last couple of movies, Nolan has gone off on a tangent where he's like, okay, but let's make it backwards now. Or yes, but now let's make it black holes. And he's kind of like very much interested in the concepts of time and space and these kind of things, which is great. Like, me too, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, it's like, for example, Tenet was too much.
Yeah, that's the feedback I got from Tenet as well.
This one is very much grounded because it's stuff that happened. Like, he can't just like, okay, now we'll make everybody walk backwards or some random thing like that. But apart from that, the acting is fantastic. The story is super interesting. It's 3 hours, yes, but they go by. And it really tells the story from Oppenheimer's point of view. So, for example, the part where the bombs are dropped in Japan, you as the viewer find out via like radio or newspaper, which is how the actual character of Oppenheimer found out. Like, you don't see the bombs being dropped or anything because you see the whole movie from his point of view.
That sounds really interesting. And I'm still on the fence as if I will go see it in the cinema just because of its length. Now, if I had to give our listeners recommendations, it's always very hard to convey taste or what you liked or what you think people will like. My recommendation would be that Barbie, in my opinion, is a must see. It's not too long.
Yeah.
It will probably cater for everybody. It's funny. It's great. Watch it.
Yeah.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, if you think you will like it, if you think it's your cup of tea, it is your cup of tea. If you're not interested, don't go watch it. You won't enjoy it. But if you like animation and like good animation, if you like Seth Rogen's sense of humor, go watch it. How would you describe Oppenheimer?
Go watch it. It's super interesting. That's it. It's
a must see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's one of, I mean, if you like Christopher Nolan, you're going to like this one. A lot of people do. So, and it's such an interesting character. It's an interesting character, but overall, it's just a great movie.
And what about Mission Impossible?
Mission Impossible, if you like the previous ones and you want more of that, watch it. If not, that's it. It's a very basic action movie with very great action.
Okay, so two must-sees, Barbie and Oppenheimer. One movie which you must see if you think you're going to like it. And if you like the previous Mission Impossible movies, watch this one. Otherwise, you can watch the previous ones.
Would you say your mythos is a must drink?
No.
Would you say your mythos is a must drink if you're on a beach in Greece looking at the sunset?
No.
Oh, you're on team... What are the other ones? Fix and...
Okay. My honest opinion of this beer is that it's basically the Greek Heineken. And it's not as good as Heineken. So this is literally only good because it's cheap. And if you're in Greece, because it's widely available. I honestly cannot, in good conscience, give it more than 2 out of 5.
Oh, wow.
Out of 6, sorry. 2 out of a 6-pack.
Okay, so you just increase the scale without increasing the score. It's that below average.
It's below average. It's not terrible, but it's not a good beer. How's yours?
So mine, I have the Blonde du Soif, which is a blonde, kind of like what it says, but it tastes kind of weird, as in it's kind of bitter. I wouldn't say it's like an IPA bitter, but it's just a little bit bitter, which makes it very interesting. Here on their website, they say that the fermentation process is similar to that of a modern ale, but ultimately unclassifiable, and it is above all the free beer. Whatever. It's okay. I don't know. Kind of like, it has an interesting taste, but I wouldn't say I'm wowed by it. But at the same time, it's good. I'll give it a 3.5 out of 6.
Okay, not bad. Sounds like it's a better beer than mine.
Yes, but also I'm not in a beach or imagining I'm in a Greek beach at sunset.
All right, and I think that wraps up today's episode. And I'm not really going to summarize it because we only did one thing, and that was talk about the latest movies which are out this summer. Starting off with Mission Impossible, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, Barbie, and Oppenheimer. And if you have to take one thing away from this episode, is that you have to go watch Barbie and you have to go watch Oppenheimer. Do you have anything to add, Marco?
Look at that. You did a summary despite saying you wouldn't.
Me.
No, thank you so much for listening. And Des, I'll talk to you next time.
See you next time, guys. Absolutely banging.